The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Once again, Israeli school children this morning will be staying home for a few hours. There is a partial strike again until 10 o'clock this morning, which is quite unusual in Israel around this time of year.
Yeah, normally September.
Exactly, just when the school year opens, and that's when the brinkmanship really begins. But this time already it has started even before the end of the school year, which is today, I think, for many high school students, and over the coming weeks for the rest of the school children. But today, at least, kindergarten children, primary school and middle school children will be staying home until 10 o'clock. The issue is mostly about salaries, and it's hardly surprising that this issue arises. Apparently, the union, the teachers' union, is demanding that new teachers earn a minimum of 10,000 shekels a month. Now, 10,000 shekels a month is hardly even a living wage. And so if we consider the fact that most of these new teachers will probably be single and needing to live on their own or potentially in some sort of a flat share arrangement, I can't honestly see how they can come out on 10,000 shekels a month. Really, I can't. Right. And that's the minimum that's being demanded right now. So it's hardly surprising that this issue has arisen. However, there are a number of other things in the mix. And the things that are in the mix are, of course, the lengthy summer vacation, which is due to begin soon and will last until September. And that's considered to be something of a luxury, particularly by our finance minister, Victor Lieberman. He would like teachers to agree to have only a one-month vacation in the summer rather than 2 months. And then he is willing to talk more about salaries because he considers that the salary is really commensurate with some of the perks that the teachers receive, including this lengthy vacation. One of the other things that's on the agenda is the fact that next year, or next school year, when we get to the period of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, we've got three weeks where a chag begins on a Monday, and therefore there is some discussion about taking the Sunday as a sort of extended weekend into the chag that happens before Rosh Hashanah, before Sukkot, and before Simchat Torah. And so those are three school days that the teachers, I think, are wanting to take a bridge holiday. And there is discussion about how they will make up those days. So quite a number of discussions going on with the teachers' union and the Ministry of Finance. The reason that the teachers are choosing to strike now is that because they accuse the Ministry of Finance of coming to discussions unprepared, not being serious about the issue on the table. And even though they are engaging in dialogue, this dialogue, at least to the teachers' union, doesn't seem to be taken seriously enough by the government officials. So we have a standoff, hardly surprising at all.
Absolutely. The IDF attacked targets in Gaza over the weekend after a single rocket was fired towards Israel in the early hours of Saturday morning. What gave rise to the rocket fire?
So there have been a number of incidents that took place late last week, including the killing of a number of operatives, both mostly within the area of Judea and Samaria. It's somewhat interesting to watch how the different terror organizations scramble to lay claim to various members of these organizations who get killed in the course of operations against the IDF. The moment it's announced that a certain individual has been killed, all of a sudden you have Islamic Jihad raising up saying it was one of their heroes, and you get Fatah saying actually that he was one of their heroes. And it's only when the funeral takes place and you see the actual dress that they dress the dead person in as they take them to the funeral that you can really tell which of the terror organizations they belong to, because it seems like everybody suddenly lays claim to this martyred hero who has been killed in the course of operations against the IDF. But there were a few cases last week when people were killed, and the rocket that was fired towards Ashkelon in the early hours of Saturday morning, it is claimed was fired exactly 24 hours after one of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad operatives was killed by the IDF. So that seemed to be kind of a retaliation of sorts for the death of that particular individual in the course of interactions with IDF. Fortunately, the one rocket that was fired towards Ashkelon was intercepted by the Iron Dome, our miraculous Iron Dome that does such amazing work for us. And just interestingly, as an aside, has now been positioned on naval vessels that are patrolling the gas fields. And we actually have a naval Iron Dome that is now active at sea in order to protect the gas fields that, of course, we've spoken about on a few occasions and are being exploited for gas in the Mediterranean. But the Iron Dome doing miraculous work for us. Also on Saturday morning, the IDF retaliated. They struck particularly one watchtower that had been erected right on the Gaza border, looking over Kibbutz Nativ Ha'asara, which is right on the northern border with Gaza. That particular watchtower was demolished and was reconstructed within 24 hours. All of a sudden, back again came the watchtower with almost no further ado. It was done and with messages actually affixed to it this time. This is a watchtower that actually overlooks the Gaza wall. It's been built to a height that actually overlooks the Gaza wall and can see into Kibbutz Nativ Ha'asara. So that was considered to be a target, but unfortunately wasn't particularly effective, as that watchtower was erected almost immediately after it was destroyed. There were a number of other targets that were destroyed in the Gaza Strip, and it was interesting to see some of the footage, because it seems as if though the targets that were destroyed in Gaza in that particular attack later on Saturday were hit by these bunker buster type bombs. They actually seem to have penetrated very, very deep below the surface, and they had a particular explosion, which one could see on the videos that were released afterwards, showing how they actually exploded with a direct fire straight back up into the air again. It's quite something to watch. And so that is an indication that those were bunker buster missiles that were dropped by the IDF in order to penetrate deep underground rather than to hit targets that were above the ground. That all happened on Saturday. Since then, we had quite an extended alarm that was sounded in the area of Jerusalem yesterday evening, and also Eilat. And an interesting report this morning suggests not only, well, pretty much immediately after that extended siren went off, and it seems as if though those sirens were sounding for about an hour yesterday evening, which is very, very concerning to the people who live in that area. And it was almost immediately announced that the sirens were sounded by mistake, so there was no real threat that triggered that siren.
Very unnerving. Wow.
This morning, the IDF Cyber Directorate has admitted that it seems as if though those false rocket warning sirens were activated as a result of a cyber attack. And this is something which is obviously of concern, because the question is, how exactly was it possible to penetrate those systems? There was more information that came out of the Israel National Cyber Directorate, who said that they think that the cyber attack attacked the local area siren systems rather than the central system that would activate a siren in the event of a danger. So it seems as if though they managed somehow to penetrate the local system and just activate that siren on a local basis, rather than getting into the centralized system, which could potentially be of more concern. But when you are the resident around that area and you're hearing that siren going on and on and on and on for almost an hour, very, very unnerving indeed. I suppose one could argue that it's better to have a false alarm siren go off when you know don't need it, rather than not to have a siren go off when you do need it. That would be more concerning. So clearly, that's going to be the subject of some further investigation to find out exactly what caused all of that yesterday.
But potentially very, very problematic if you can have a siren going off, causing chaos at a time maybe where there are attacks in other areas. So I'd imagine it is something that they really need to deal with. The government may have won a lifeline for an extra week as opposition politicians decide on their tactics to bring the coalition government down. And this is interesting.
Yeah, and conflicting reports,
yeah,
to be honest.
Well,
about.
You alluded to this last week where you said it's actually equally as problematic for some if the government has to fall.
Yeah, I think that the opposition are currently unsure as to what exactly they want to do. What we do know is we have that drop dead date at the end of June, which concerns the extension of Israeli law to Judea and Samaria. And we've discussed that and the fact that the government was unable to extend that law, and that will expire at the end of June. And that is considered to be potentially a vote of no confidence in the government in the event that they're unable somehow to extend the law, to extend that particular law, which will allow Israeli law to rule in the areas of Judea and Samaria where it doesn't naturally extend. And so there was talk about the government trying to bring an emergency bill of sorts to the Knesset today to see if they can somehow extend the law of the laws in Judea and Samaria. And in the event that that fails, then it would effectively lead to a vote of no confidence in the government to be brought by the opposition on Wednesday. That was the original timetable, and we spoke about this last week as well. Some reports have come out in the press suggesting that the opposition wish to delay all of this for another week and rather bring all of this to the Knesset next week. But of course, next week is already heading towards the deadline date of the end of June. So we're not exactly clear as we sit here right now whether the government will try somehow to bring that law to the Knesset today or whether all of this activity will be rolled over until next week and the government will survive another week, at least another week, to see what goes on. So all of this really swings around the rogue Yamina Knesset Ner Orbach, who needs to make his decision about what he wants to do. There were reports that he's being courted by the coalition government to potentially give him some sort of a significant role outside of politics so that they can get him a little bit out of the way so that he doesn't cause all of this chaos within the Knesset, but which might give him a role which he considers to be meaningful, that he can do what he likes to do best, but outside of the Knesset. There are also talks about talking to a few other potentially problematic politicians, some of whom are within the ruling coalition and who might well somehow be taunted back, might be tempted to come back into the coalition at least to support them at this particular stage, as the government really hangs on by its fingernails in order to survive. So I think if the activities of trying to extend the law of Judea and Samaria don't take place this week, we can take it as given that next week will be the final week in which all of this will need to be resolved, failing which we will potentially be going into, I think, our fifth election since 2019. So that seems, at least for betting people, to be the most likely scenario, but we are not exactly sure whether all of that activity will play itself out this week or whether there might be still another week in the life of this particular coalition. We will see all of that over the course of the next week or 10 days.
Absolutely. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has arranged to visit Turkey later this week amidst ongoing concerns for Israelis visiting Istanbul. What is the latest report from Istanbul? From Turkey.
So loads and loads of reports of coming out of Iran. The little Iran check your mizuz corner is like going wild at the moment. Mm-hmm. Honestly wild. What's going on in Iran is honestly crazy. A report of some sort of an oil refinery fire taking place, an attack carried out by a drone against some military establishment in Iran. I mean, the reports just never end as to all kinds of strange and unexplained events that are happening in Iran that all look more than just coincidence. Just, you know, on and on and on. And of course, the threat that has been at the very, very highest level of the last week or two against Israelis traveling around Turkey, particularly in Istanbul, further stories coming out of the security services, Israeli security services acting in Turkey and rescuing Israelis, the one story that we spoke about is just a drop in the ocean in comparison to some of the other things that are going on in Istanbul right now. Reports of Israelis being minutes away from death and being somehow rescued by the security services. This is an intelligence operation that is almost unrivaled. It's just unbelievable when you hear the stories of what's going on to understand the nature and the extent of this operation that is currently going on in Istanbul. And up until the moment that we sit here, and we obviously don't like to tempt fate, but no successes against Israelis, not in Turkey and not in Istanbul in particular, and reports from Iran that some senior generals have been fired over their inability to carry out a single attack against an Israeli in Istanbul, considering the extent of the operation that Iran has launched and the number of teams that have been sent to Turkey to carry out these particular attacks. The fact that they've actually achieved zero success up until now has apparently cost the jobs of quite a number of senior generals in the Iranian military establishment. So that's just quite an interesting snippet that's come out, because the Iranians are also very frustrated about what's going on. So Foreign Minister Yair Lapid is on his way to Ankara later this week, in spite of all the government chaos that's going on at home in the Knesset and elsewhere. But he's found it appropriate and necessary to visit Ankara to meet with his opposite number in Ankara. And this follows on a call that was made by President Isaac Herzog to the Turkish President Erdogan to thank the Turks for supporting the operation that's going on by the Israelis. Some anecdotal evidence: I was at my gym last week and I heard people talking who had recently been in Istanbul, and the talk of the discussions about what they'd experienced in Istanbul was, when we were in the Grand Bazaar, we could actually identify the Israeli agents who were walking around. We could see them. We could notice who they were, because we know what to look out for. And they were there all the time, everywhere. They just seem to be teeming around the city. And we are told now that instead of 5,000 Israeli visited in Istanbul as they were last week, now there are only 2,000 Israeli visitors in Istanbul. I just wonder who these 2,000 people are.
Who still goes?
Think that it's a good idea to be there. And of course, Israeli TV channels interviewing visitors to Istanbul in the square, in Taksim Square, whatever, these great interviews in Hebrew right out in the open like that. I'm just wondering to myself, why do people insist upon being so gung-ho? You've been told that it's a dangerous place. Go to your hotel rooms. Don't even open for housekeeping, which is the instruction at the moment. When you hear a knock on the door at your hotel room, don't open the door, not even if they say housekeeping. That is the extent of the danger that is going around.
And people still
Istanbul
going.
Right,
2,000 Israelis still going to visit last week.
Crazy.
I mean, it's insane. Absolutely
crazy.
Insane. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Anthony brings us the Israel Report every morning at 7:45. We'll catch him tomorrow at the same time.